Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. On today's episode, we're looking at how stories often feature tricksters who think their way out of problems. And we're going to start with one of the oldest known tricksters in folklore, Anansi the Spider from West Africa. Philadelphia storyteller Charlotte Blake Alston brings us a story where it will take the cleverness of all of Anansi's children to save him from danger. Here's Charlotte with Anansi and his six children.
Long ago, back when the earth and the sky were brand new, and all the creatures on the earth lived in peace with one another, there lived in a far corner of the African continent, Anansi the Spider. Now, back when the earth and the sky were brand new, the nighttime was black and long. Now, young creatures had pretty good eyes. They could see right through the darkness to see where they were going. But the older creatures, like Anansi, had to make sure that if they took a trip away from their home, they came back before that sun went down and it got dark. Now, Anansi had six children. Each of Anansi's children had a special gift. The first one was called Sea Trouble. What was his name? He could see trouble when it was happening miles and miles away. The second child of Anansi was called Road Builder. Who?
Road Builder.
He could take sticks, twigs, mud, pebbles, and build himself a road that went anywhere he wanted. The third child of Anansi was called River Drinker. What was her name?
River Drinker.
In one gulp, she could hold an entire river in her jaws. The fourth child of Anansi was called Game Skinner. Who?
Game Skinner.
With his bare hands, he could pull the skin off of a dead animal or a fish in a second. The fifth child of Anansi was called Stone Thrower. Who? It is said he once threw a stone so high, it knocked a star out of its position in the sky. The sixth child of Anansi was called Cushion. Who?
Cushion.
Everyone in the village loved Cushion because Cushion followed around little children because every now and then they would climb up high in places where they should not have been, and sometimes they would. Aww. Cushion would run under them and they would land on his soft, cushiony belly. Well, one day, Anansi took a trip away from his home, and the sun went down and it grew dark. But Anansi had not come back. Trouble peered into the darkness and could see that Anansi was in trouble. Road Builder built a road. They followed the road this way and that way, this way and that way. It ended at the river, but still there was no Anansi. Trouble peered down into the water and could see that Anansi was inside the belly of a fish. River Drinker took a big drink
and held the river in her jaws.
Game Skinner pulled the skin off of that fish, and Anansi came walking out in between the bones. Well, they were about to go home when a hawk came down, picked up Anansi, flew off with him in the sky. Stone Thrower got a rock. He threw it. It hit the hawk, and he let go of Anansi. But now Anansi was falling faster and faster down to the earth. Quickly, Cushion ran under him, and Anansi landed on his soft, cushiony belly. Well, they all came back home, and Anansi thought of what his children had done for him. So he decided he wanted to give a gift to the child who helped him the most. So he called upon Yame, Creator. Creator said, when you could not see your way out of darkness, your children provided a light. A gift of light should be given. And right beside Anansi appeared a great round globe of light. This, he said, this is what I will give to the child who helped me the most. So he gathered together everyone in the village and announced what he was going to do. Well, They started to argue about who should get it. Some said, it should go to Trouble. Others said, no, it is Road Builder who did the most to help Anansi. Some of them said, no, it is River Drinker who truly saved him from danger. Others said, it is Game Skinner who saved his father's life. Some said Stone Thrower was the one who should receive the gift. Many said Cushion was the only one who should get it. No one could agree. No one could decide, including Anansi. So he called upon Yame once again. Creator said, this is what I will do. I will take this globe of light and place it high here in the sky, where all can share in its light and be reminded of how all of Anansi's children saved him from danger that day. Now the Ashanti say that we are all Anansi's children. Each one of us has a special gift that we can use to help someone else. And if you go outside sometimes at night and you look up in the sky and you see that round globe of light and it seems to be shining its brightest, you can be sure that somewhere one of Anansi's children is using her gifts or using his gifts to lend someone a helping hand. Maybe that child will be one of you.
That was Charlotte Blake Alston with her story, Anansi and His Six Children. Now, strangely, this story reminds me of two people, my brother, Joshua, my younger brother, and Cheryl White, my old babysitter, who, when I was a kid, first introduced me to trickster stories, stories about the little guy getting the extra slice of cake or getting out of the trap or winning the fortune using nothing but his wits and his smarts. That's where I first heard stories of Br'er Rabbit and Anansi and others, all from my babysitter, Cheryl White. And I wondered if I would ever meet someone in real life like the tricksters I heard in those stories. Then, when I was in college, visiting home to do some laundry and get a home-cooked meal, I overheard a conversation between my mom and my little brother Joshua. That's where my brother comes in. My brother's kind of an interesting guy, and at a very young age, he'd gotten pretty busy as a paid guitar player. I mean, like when he was in junior high school. And now he was in high school, and he'd let some of that get away from him to the point that the high school had just sent a notice home that Joshua was about to fail a class or two. And my mom turned to Joshua and said, "That's it. You're too busy. When you're too busy for getting your schoolwork done, you're too busy. I'm grounding you. You're grounded, Joshua." Well, I perked my ears up then. Grounding wasn't something that was in my mother's parenting toolkit. None of us kids had ever been grounded before. So this was getting interesting. There was a little gasp from my brother, but then he spoke. "Grounded," he said, "because I'm too busy? Mom, you're way busier than I am. Way, way busier. I'm not busy at all compared to you." And at that, there was a brief silence between them. And then my mother sort of looked thoughtfully out the kitchen window and said, "Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm grounded." And they both laughed. And that's all that was ever said about it. My brother, it should be said, graduated from high school and now plays guitar for a living. Everybody turned out okay. But I look back on that memory of my brother slipping the trap of getting grounded, using nothing but his wits, as my own real-life trickster tale. It's a fun memory, and I've talked about it a lot. I may have even talked about it on the show. And that's where Charlotte's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the apple seed.
There's a lot coming up, but I wanted to take just a moment to let you know about another show from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The podcast is called Constant Wonder, and it's hosted by Marcus Smith. In each episode, Marcus takes you on kind of a quest to find the awe and wonder in all nature, human or wild. Not just interested in the natural world, interested in human nature as well. Marcus's guests tell fascinating stories and talk about experiences that have left them awestruck. You'll love the podcast. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to Constant Wonder anytime you need a little dose of awe or wonder in your life. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio.
Some more. Okay, I'll proceed with my story inspired by the apple seed.
It's a pleasure to be with you on the apple seed today, and we got more tricksters to share with you. Donna Washington from North Carolina is here to tell us a Brer Rabbit story called Brer Rabbit and the Tar Baby. But first, she'll explain a little bit about how Anansi came to America and what happened to him once he got there.
Brer Rabbit is the quintessential trickster in American folklore. Well, African American folklore. He is based on Anansi the spider. Now, Anansi is an African trickster, and when the Africans were taken out of Africa, they were brought here to the Americas. And in South America, they weren't allowed to speak their languages or worship their religions, but they wanted to keep Anansi. So they turned Anansi the spider into a woman. And if you go down into South America in various places, and in Central America, you find stories about a woman named Aunt Nancy. It's Anansi the spider. In America, again, the Africans weren't allowed to speak their languages or worship their religions or tell their stories. They wanted to keep Anansi. They turned him into a rabbit. He is the basis for Brer Rabbit. Now, Brer is a shortened form of the word brother. And all of these stories are about one thing. The second you stop thinking, you're going to be in trouble. Now, Brer Rabbit jumped all over America, got mixed up with the Native American rabbits and Grandma Spider and Coyote and all of the tricksters that came in from all over the world. And somewhere in the 40s, they all got turned into Bugs Bunny. So the next time you see Bugs Bunny, you are in fact seeing a really small piece of Africa. So here is one of my favorite Brer stories. Now, this story I'm going to tell you is a slightly participatory story. Your first part sounds like this. How do to you? That's your part. All right? I'm going to say how do to you, and you're going to say how do to you back. All righty? So let's practice. How do to you?
How do to you?
That's beautiful. You guys did a great job. I'm going to say how do to you. You're going to say fine, thank you, and then you're going to say how do back. Are you ready? How do to you?
Fine, thank you.
How do to you?
I'm fine, thank you. That's beautiful. One morning, Brer Rabbit was just a-bouncing down the road, having himself a good old time. Every time he saw someone, he'd say, how do to you? Fine, thank you. Down the road he'd go, bouncing and bouncing. Saw someone else, well, how do to you?
Fine, thank you.
How do you? I'm fine, thank you much. Mm-hmm. He loved that. His favorite thing, checking in with everyone. Now, Brer Bear and Brer Fox was watching that critter bounce on down the road, talk to everybody. Now, they always had a hankering to eat Brer Rabbit, mostly just because he kept making a fool out of them. And they saw him bouncing down the road, and they got themselves an idea. Well, actually, Brer Fox got an idea. Brer Bear wasn't much on ideas. He just did whatever Brer Fox was doing. And Brer Fox says, I think I know how to catch that critter. And Brer Bear said, yeah, what we gonna do? Brer Fox said, I'll show you. And he got some tar, some thick, sticky tar, and he put it right there by the side of the road in three great big old globs like a great big old tar snowman.
And then, while Br'er Bear was looking at it saying, "That don't look much like a person," Br'er Fox snatched the hat right off his head. Br'er Bear said, "What happened to my hat?" And Br'er Fox put it on top of the tall baby's head. And while Br'er Bear was trying to figure out what happened to his hat, Br'er Fox reached out and snatched some fur right off of Br'er Bear's butt. And he put it right there underneath the hat. And Br'er Bear was trying to worry about his hat and his butt. When Br'er Fox reached up and grabbed two buttons right off his coat and stuck them in there like they was eyes. And as his coat was falling off and Br'er Bear was very confused, Br'er Fox grabbed his coat and put it on the tall baby and said, "Nah, look." And Br'er Bear said, "Well, that looks much better." Well, the two of them critters hid. Now, I know earlier I was saying how do to y'all was saying how do back, but this time I need y'all not to be so friendly. All right? Br'er Bear watched as Br'er Rabbit bounced on down the road past that tar baby and said, "How do to you?" And the tar baby didn't say nothing. He stopped. "Excuse me. You must not be from around these parts. When someone says how do to you, you're supposed to say how do back. Let's try that again." He turned to the tar baby. "How do to you?" Tar baby didn't say nothing. He said, "Now, excuse me, that's just rude. When I say how do to you, you're supposed to say how do back. You better do it this time. How do to you?" Tar baby didn't say nothing. Br'er Rabbit said, "I'm going to teach you a thing or two. I'm going to pop you in the nose if you don't say how do to your back. Are you ready? How do to you?" Tar baby didn't say nothing. Br'er Rabbit hauled off and popped that tar baby right in the face. And his arm got stuck up to his elbow. "You better give my arm back. Give it back, I'm gonna hit you again. Give my arms back. Give my arms back, I'm gonna kick you. Mom, give my other foot back, I'm gonna kick you." And then he was wrestling around with that tall baby. He got so stuck, the only thing he could move was his eyeballs. Br'er Fox and Br'er Bear was laughing so hard, they came out from behind the grassy bushes over there, and they pulled up Br'er Rabbit, and they pulled all that tar off of him, and Br'er Fox was holding him up, and he said, "Now, what am I going to do with you?" And Br'er Rabbit was just looking at him, and he just smiled. Br'er Fox says, "I know what I'm going to do with you. I'm going to skin you alive." And Br'er Rabbit said, "That's all right, my coat gets a little hot sometimes. Skin me alive if you must, but please don't throw me in the briar patch." Br'er Fox looked at him. He was trying to scare him. He said, no, I'm not going to skin you alive. I'm going to drop you in a pot of boiling water." Br'er Rabbit said, "Ooh, that's fine, because I'm a little chilly right now. But please don't throw me in the briar patch." Because he was trying to scare him. He said, no, I'm not going to put you in the pot first. No, I'm going to hang you by your neck till you dead." And Br'er Rabbit said, "Well, my feet will surely appreciate that, because they get a little sore on the ground, and you hanging me up will be lovely. But please don't throw me in the briar patch." Now, Br'er Fox was wondering what he was so scared about that briar patch for. And he looked over, and he saw it had great big old thorns in it. He thought if he threw Br'er Rabbit in there, that rabbit would be cut to shreds. He said, "I'm going to throw you in the briar patch. No. And Br'er Fox reared back and chucked that rabbit over his head. And that rabbit went tail over feet over tail over feet over tail over feet over ears. Tail over feet over tail over feet over tail over feet over ears. And dropped right in that briar patch. Chunk. And Br'er Fox sat there giggling to himself. But he didn't hear nothing. He looked down off in there, and there was Br'er Rabbit just dancing around. Br'er Fox says, "Well, how come you ain't caught up?" And Br'er Rabbit said, "I was born in this briar patch. This is exactly where I wanted to be." When you have a problem, best you think your way out of it. Because the second you try to fight your way out of it, your problem will get bigger.
That was Donna Washington with a classic, Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby. And we've actually got another Br'er Rabbit story to share. This one from Ohio storyteller Lynn Ford. She calls it The Happy Place. And as you listen, you'll hear some characters and some situations that are a little like the story Donna Washington told us. The Briar Patch even plays a big role in both stories. The two stories are alike in some ways and different in some ways, and that's because of how stories behave. They travel the land from teller to listener, told and told again, and changed a little with each telling until a single story becomes two and then 10 and then more, all a little alike and a little different. That's one of the magic tricks that stories do. Here's Lynn Ford with The Happy Place on the Appleseed.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'm thrilled to share my stories with you, and I do have a lot of them. When I first started telling stories at festivals across the country and now in other places in the world, I asked my husband to time the stories for me. He's my roadie, and now he's retired, so he gets even more work from me. And so he started timing the stories. These were in the early days of my travels. And then he said, I'm not timing anymore. And I thought, okay, I've disturbed him. He's just sick of doing this. And so I said, well, that's all right, thanks. He said, no, you don't understand. You now have more than 24 hours worth of stories. Nobody wants to hear you run your mouth that long. I think you're good. So I'm grateful that I have the material that I have, but most of it began with me being a listener to folks in my family. They were my favorite storytellers. My daddy, who was in the last graduating classes of the Tuskegee Airmen and was among those whose battle was to integrate the troops here in the United States, was my favorite storyteller. He told all kinds of folk tales, and he could make up a story just like that. And then when you'd ask him to tell it again, because he couldn't remember what he made up just like that, he changed the story. And it was still good. One day he started a story about a character whom he named Niebuhr Du. And it took about two other storytelling sessions for me to realize it was Robin Hood. And he just said his name backwards, Niebuhr Du. And my brother and I cannot remember the rest of those stories. We just remember the beginning. He said, once upon a time, there was a man by the name of Niebuhr Du. And he wasn't like Robin Hood. He didn't steal from the rich and give to the poor. He stole from everybody and kept it for himself. And then he learned a lesson from others, and that changed him into somebody who was perhaps as good as Robin Hood. But we can't remember the story. We would have to make it up. And folks were very good at making up stories in my family, but some of them, well, they just came from hearing stories when they were children, perhaps reading stories, but I think more of the knee-to-knee storytelling in our Afro-Latchan or African-American Appalachian family. And one of them had to do with my favorite character, Rabbit. Now, some folks say Br'er Rabbit. There's also Bro Rabbit, Bruh Rabbit, Br'er Rabbit, She Rabbit, He Rabbit, Ms. Rabbit, Ms. Molly, Ms. Hare. We just said Rabbit in my family because there were too many rabbit stories. And Rabbit was on his way home. And you can help him go home by patting on your legs. And he was thinking about his good wife, Miss Molly, and all his children. They called him the Little Rabs. And he loved going home. It was his happy place. So he started singing, going back to my happy place, going home to my happy place. Like fish in the river, like birds in the air, I'm happy in my happy place. And he was so happy he had his head back. Sun was shining on his face. He'd closed his eyes because he knew where he was going. And then he had to stop because he'd run into something fuzzy. And he was kind of scared to open his eyes. Something big and fuzzy. Something big and smelly and fuzzy. He knew who it was. He opened up his eyes. He said, hi, Brother Bear. Bear said, hello, breakfast. Rabbit said, my name's not Breakfast. But I know you could change my name to Breakfast if you wanted to. And I know I can't run fast enough to get away from you when I'm this close. You could just reach out and grab me by my ears. And that makes me feel so bad because, you see, I was going to my happy place. And now I'm not going to make it to my happy place. And Bear said, what's a happy place? Rabbit asked, Brother Bear, you don't know what a happy place is? Bear said, don't think so. You don't have a happy place? Bear asked, what is it? Rabbit said, oh, it's a place where your heart feels happy. It's a place where your brain starts smiling. It's a place where it seems like the sun is shining down just for you. That's a happy place. Bear said, sounds good. Give me your happy place. Rabbit said, I don't think I understood you. What did you say? Bear said, I said, give me your happy place. Rabbit said, man, I can't give you my happy place. He was thinking about his wife and his children and his home. And he said to Bear, if you want a happy place, you're going to have to find one or make one for yourself. Bear said, I don't feel like doing that. Give me your happy place. And he held out one big paw, and then he held out the other, and he showed the claws, ding, 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 ding. And he grinned that grin with those big sharp teeth, and he growled, give me your happy place. Well, Rabbit knew he wasn't going to give Bear his happy place, his wife, his children, his home. He wasn't going to take him there. But you see, Rabbit was one of those folks that always used his head to get out of trouble, never his fists. And he already had an idea. He said, I'll take you to a happy place, Brother Bear. You just walk with me and I'll take you to a happy place. And they started walking together, Rabbit and Bear walking. But to make himself feel better, Rabbit started singing. Gonna find a happy place, gonna find a happy place. Like fish in the river, like birds in the air, I'm happy in my happy place. And Bear started teasing. He said, yeah, I guess you need a happy place, because you're the funniest looking thing I've ever seen in my life. You know, sometimes bullies like to tease. He talked about Rabbit's big feet, and Rabbit's long ears, and Rabbit's funny little tail, and Rabbit's funny little teeth, and Rabbit just kept on walking. Didn't pay any attention. Sang his song again. You can sing it too. Gonna find a happy place, gonna find a happy place. Like fish in the river, like birds in the air, I'm happy in my happy place. And Bear just kept on teasing. And Rabbit just kept on walking and singing. And Bear just kept on teasing. And Rabbit just kept on walking and singing. And Bear just kept on teasing until he had to stop. See, he hadn't been looking where he was going. He was looking at that rabbit and talking about him terribly. And he had walked himself right into a blackberry patch. A briar patch with all kinds of thorns amongst the leaves. And he was stuck in those thorns. He'd walked right in there. But in the meantime, Rabbit had walked right through the briar patch, because rabbits know about briar patches, and come out on the other side. And there was Bear. He tried to move his paw. Ow. Tried to move his ear. Ow. Tried to move his foot. Ow. Rabbit looked at him and said, Brother Bear, what's wrong? Bear said, I'm stuck. Rabbit asked, can you get free? Brother Bear said, no. Rabbit asked, are you sure? Bear said, ow. Yeah, I'm sure. Rabbit said, well, good. Then this must be a happy place. For me, Because my heart is happy, my brain is smiling, I feel like the sun is shining down just for me. And now I am going to my real happy place. You figure out how to get yourself out of this trouble all by yourself. Bye, said Rabbit, and he made his way home. Happy as he could be. You see, sometimes you bump into trouble. Sometimes you walk right into trouble. Sometimes it's just waiting for you no matter what you do. But if you keep your head, you use your brain, you feel your heart, and you keep on trying, you'll get to your happy place. And everybody needs a little happy place. That's the end of that story.
Lynn Ford with The Happy Place. Have you ever had to use your wits to get out of a tough situation? Have you ever had a group of friends or family members, like Anansi's children, who banded together to help you out? And once trouble has passed, where do you go to find your happy place? I bet there are stories there. We want to thank Charlotte Blake Alston, Donna Washington, and Lynn Ford for bringing us their folk tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. Our audio engineer is DJ Cromarty, and the rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. And if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed. Are you turned off by the news because of how angry and depressing it can be, but still want to engage with important issues? I know that describes me. And I want to introduce you to Top of Mind, another podcast from the BYU Radio family of shows. Each week, the Top of Mind team and award-winning host Julie Rose take one tough, important topic, and they dive deep. The goal is learning to stay open and curious when confronted with perspectives that challenge us. Best of all, every episode will leave you feeling hopeful and empowered to become a better advocate for what matters to you. Top of Mind. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to the Top of Mind podcast from BYU Radio.